You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
OBM, Ohio Business Machines, and Sharp Copiers, preferred copier provider of the Cleveland Browns. They know every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit OhioBusinessMachines.com. We go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline now and bring in a guest right now that we're excited to talk to, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly and Patriots.com. You can follow him on Twitter at @E_SCAL. Eric, thanks for being with us here today.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you.
All right, we'll start with a good one here. I'm Matt Patricia. Why is Matt Patricia the next great head coach in the National Football League?
Well, I mean, he's got coaching / teaching in his blood. His parents were both teachers. He comes from, obviously, one of the most successful coaching trees in the league. And, he's been at this for a long time, and he's approached his job the way Belichick likes his assistants to approach their jobs, which is the same way he did, starting at the very bottom, doing all the grunt work, knowing what it's like to be an underpaid assistant doing, film cut-ups and putting practice sheets together and rising through the ranks, patiently working your way through and eventually getting the job that you want, being a coordinator. And, now being on the precipice of becoming a head coach. And, he's been in this environment for so long. He's seen how successful organizations are run. And I think he has the makeup to be a good head coach. He has that, the temperament. He's liked by his players, but he's also respected by them, which I think is, something you shouldn't take for granted. I mean, a lot of coaches are liked, but not all of them are respected. And I think he's got both of those qualities. So I think if the Browns were to hire him, I think, they might have more success than they've had with a couple of other previous Belichick assistants.
Do you think he's would check the box as being a leader of men?
I would say so. And it's funny. Last week we were talking with some of the players on both sides of the ball about both of the coordinators here who were, linked with other head coaching jobs around the league. And we asked Devin McCourty about, what it's like to play for Matt Patricia. And, he described him as being intense, the kind of guy that, brings a certain attitude to the workplace every day that the players on defense here feed off of, regardless of what's going on in his personal life or, in his work life. He comes to work every day with the same sort of intense attitude and approach that, sometimes you go to work, not every day is the same, and, sometimes you might feel sluggish or just really not into it. And McCourty says that when he comes to work every day, he has that same sort of go-get-him attitude, and the players on defense here sort of feed off of that. So I think that's the best way I can answer that question.
I think along those same lines, the question I was thinking about is about the culture that Bill Belichick has created, the winning ways that the Patriots have enjoyed for many, many years now. And you look at the Cleveland Browns as a franchise who's, trying to find their identity over the last 15 or 16 years. Is Matt Patricia a guy that can come in here and embrace, the losing culture that the Browns have been under for so long and be a guy, as you just mentioned about the McCourty brother, that said he comes in with an optimistic approach and wanting to build? Is he personality-wise a guy that you think can embrace the losing and be a part of the process that creates the similar type of culture that they've embraced there in New mm-hmm. England?
It's a great question, and it remains to be seen because as I alluded to just a moment ago, the Browns have gone to the Patriots well a couple of times already with guys that they thought were the solution to that problem. I'm obviously talking about Cornell and Mangini, and it really didn't work out for them,
right?
In that respect, and in that role, something tells me that this one might be different. And I think both of those guys had the same sort of experience. They were with Belichick for a long time. They were with him during the winning part of the early part of his career here when they were winning Super Bowls. And, so that in that respect, that all three of them are similar. But I think Patricia he has quietly gone about his job in a way that I think it's really hard to put a finger on how I feel this, but you know, having seen him over the years, he just strikes me as the kind of guy who I think has a very holistic knowledge about what it takes to run an organization from a coaching standpoint. And I think of the three, if he were going to be the third one that the Browns were to tap from this organization, I think he might have the best shot of actually doing what you hope and turning things around, changing the culture. And again, I can't really put a finger on exactly why, but it's just the sense that I get from him is that I think he has what it takes to make that kind of corporate-wide, company-wide change.
Talking with Eric Scalvino, covers the Patriots for Patriots.com and Patriots Football Weekly. Eric, when you talk about Matt Patricia, we've all read the stories now, the aeronautical engineering background, very smart guy. Does it seem, it seems on the surface like a no-brainer, he would be very excited about and buy into the approach that the Browns are implementing now with Paul DePodesta as the chief strategy officer and Sashi Brown as the executive vice president of football operations. Is that fair to say? Do you think he's the kind of guy that would really understand what's going on here?
You know, that's interesting because somebody asked last week, we were talking to Belichick at one of his daily briefings about that very subject, you know, about analytics and that sort of baseball-type approach to numbers when it comes to football. He doesn't really subscribe to that notion at all. That, to him, is something very foreign and obscure. And, I mean, you know, I think it's hard to say whether or not Patricia has that sort of mindset when it comes to the analytic side of the game. It might be easier to say, oh yeah, because he, you know, went to RPI and has the engineering background, that's something he would automatically you know, take a liking to. But I don't know. There's really no evidence here to suggest any of that. It's not like he goes to practice every day and has, you know, a compass and a slide rule out and is doing those kind of things. So it's hard to say whether or not that's something that he would embrace. I certainly wouldn't rule it out, obviously, given his background. But I think the more likely outcome is that you're going to see somebody who's very Belichick-like when it comes to his approach to the media, when it comes to his you know, approach to putting a staff together, the way he sort of conducts his team, those kind of things. So, and again, that's just based on what we know about him and having seen him here for the last few years.
Certainly. And you know, I would argue analytic, they're not trying to apply the baseball method here, but what Bill Belichick has done and identified in the draft is certainly analytics, problem solving, taking information to generate consistently good outcomes. The fact that Belichick was ahead of his time and knew trading guys at the first side of the downside of their prime for first round picks was smart business. That would be an analytical finding. So I think he's done a good job with it on that framework. Let me ask you this. What would be your biggest concern about Matt Patricia if you were a team hiring him as a head coach?
Well, just I think the same concern you would have with anybody who's taking on such a huge responsibility for the first time is the inexperience of it. He hasn't done it. And there are plenty of examples, and we've already talked about a couple, where being an assistant, being a coordinator under Belichick doesn't necessarily translate to success as a head coach elsewhere. And there are plenty of examples of that. And for whatever reason, either the situation isn't right or the timing for that particular person isn't right. So just in general, being somebody as a first-time head coach and also with the track record that assistants in his position have had around the league, I think that would be the biggest concern if I were in charge of an organization.
I think another concern that I have in general for whoever the Cleveland Browns select to be their next head coach is, yes, it's about that person, but it's the individual. Can they put together a high-quality staff of individuals who are also up to the task of a program like the Cleveland Browns? And do you feel that Matt Patricia is a guy that could put together, I don't want to say a star-studded staff, but a staff that is up for this challenge? And would any other assistance there from Belichick's regime kind of take that path with him here to Cleveland?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we saw that a couple of years ago with Bill O'Brien, who was the erstwhile offensive coordinator. And he was another guy like Patricia, who we kind of could tell for a couple of years before he got the Penn State job that he was being primed for and looked like he was starting to get ready to become a head coach. He had that sort of same, that temperament that you look for. And he had a couple of guys on this staff in mind that he wanted to bring along with him. And then obviously when he left Penn State, went to Houston, he's got some of those guys with him now. George Gotsen, who was a tight end coach when he was here in New England, is now his de facto offensive coordinator, I guess, down there in Houston. As far as who Patricia, if he were to become Browns head coach, might take from here, that's a little bit tougher call, because you don't really know who from the staff is willing to leave, because I mean, when somebody leaves, obviously that opens up a door for people below to maybe step up internally. So it's really hard to say. I'm not really sure if there are any sort of solid relationships that he has with anybody in particular on the staff that might look for either a promotion or either even a lateral move to go with him if he were to go to Cleveland. But I think to look for the comparison, I would say it's very similar to the Bill O'Brien example when he left and went to Penn State, where he was a youngish, around the same age as Patricia is now, and was, I think, had been primed for a number of years, and I think was able to do a good job in getting, both former players and people who weren't players but were, had some experience in coaching at any level to go with him on his staff. So I think, yeah, to answer your question, I think Patricia would be able to put together enough of a quality staff to make a positive difference if he were to get the job there.
Evan, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate the insight on Matt Patricia and just everything. One last question. Do you think that he would have somebody in mind that he would like to work with as a top talent evaluator here?
These are all great questions. But one of the things, and I think if he is hired there, I think you guys will end up seeing it firsthand, is that you don't get a lot of information out of him in any of his conference calls here. The coordinators have to do a weekly conference call with the media, and he really embraces the whole Belichick mindset of not telling the media anything they don't absolutely need to know. And I think if he were to become a head coach, I think you'd get a lot of that same approach when it comes to that. So the divulging information is not something I don't think you should get used to if the Browns are going to hire him.
Well, we certainly would be used to that. Anybody who comes from Belichick being that way. Eric, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
All right, when we come back here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, we'll take a look at the NFC wildcard games from yesterday. We've got some sound from around the NFL we can play as well. We'll get to the national championship game. We want to get your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Zagur and Wilhelm, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
The House of Pain is in effect, y'all. I say the House of Pain is in effect. You know the House of Pain is in effect, y'all. And anyone that steps up is getting wrecked.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And Dog Ben, you can check out the all-new Brownscast podcast. Cleveland Browns have given Max Linsky, the host of the show, complete access to the organization. He interviews players, coaches, and some less familiar figures who play an integral role in managing the day-to-day business of the organization. It's a whole new way to learn about the Browns. Visit ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, or download Brownscast from the iTunes store. Matt.
Yes.
We lost a legend today. David Bowie passed away after a battle with cancer. A legend. In the music industry and world, and you don't know who he is. Is that true, or were you just like being funny?
I'm being funny. Dude.
Give me one David Bowie song.
I don't know David Bowie song, but I know he's in the
movie. You can't name one David Bowie song?
Is he in the movie Labyrinth?
Yes.
Love David Bowie in Labyrinth. There you go.
All right. You don't know one of his songs, and you call
Yellow
him David
Submarine,
Bowie.
Right? He was in the Beatles?
Gibbs, how is this possible?
This is ridiculous.
What?
Are you guys both older than me?
All right, you know you like Vanilla Ice, right?
Of course. Who doesn't?
Yeah. Ice, Ice Baby, that whole riff came from a David Bowie song.
Was
Under
it?
Pressure. Doon, 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 doon,
wait,
doon,
David Bowie sang Ice, Ice Baby too?
David Bowie. Bowie. Like a Bowie knife. Like Dwayne Bowie.
He was in the movie Labyrinth, right? I love David Bowie then.
My God, I can't believe this conversation's happening.
What? I put David Bowie in the same cabinet that I put Curb Your Enthusiasm.
There it is.
Yeah, Ice Ice Baby.
No, this is David Bowie.
This is so much better than
exactly
Vanilla Ice.
Under Pressure.
No, I've heard of this before. But I think, again, the same way that
I
you said, name the like the theme or the an episode name of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I'll give you $1 million. You say name a David Bowie song. Most likely, probably.
The kid just texted me. He's like, I don't love music, but even I know Under Pressure.
This is Queen and David Bowie, Under Pressure.
See? It's not even David Bowie.
No, no. He's singing. They're both. Really,
now,
really.
And again, but in a lineup, I could pick David Bowie out of 100 people, out of 100, like one out of 100. I could pick him out. There's no doubt in my mind. 100%.
If we got a bunch of people that kind of had that sense of style all there, I think you'd struggle.
No, man. His face and his name, I know. What he did.
You don't know his name. You keep calling him David Bowie.
David Bowie. David Bowie. Same thing. Who cares? Same thing. Potato, potato.
Oh, this is not good.
It's good.
What?
It's
this good. Is great radio. What do you mean? Yeah. If we all just got along. Oh, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yes, I watched all of them last night. They're amazing episodes.
Liar.
Nathan, you're right.
Was that not the
Does
best?
Does that make good radio?
Was that not the best ever?
It was good. It was the greatest. Like,
and yes, Under Pressure was, of course, from Queen, as you point out, Queen and David Bowie.
Oh, see, it's not even. You can name another one.
No, it is a David Bowie song.
Okay. But you can't name another one.
Can you?
I already proved that I can't. But you're in front of a computer and you're Googling as we speak.
I'm not Googling. I'm looking at shoes, my brother.
How about this one that's playing right now? So I turned myself to face me. Great song.
What's the name of this?
This is David Bowie and Changes.
This is a little
Oh, I've
slow.
Heard this. I've heard this before.
I like more intense Bowie.
Yeah. Much too
fast to take that All right. Test. Rest in peace, David Bowie. Just
change it. Come on. He's 69. It's surprising to me that he's actually that. That was. I would have thought he was older than that.
I mean,
what about Ziggy Stardust?
Could do that. Let's see. Let's see if he would know that one or not.
I bet you would. I bet you would. Filmography. Maybe you know more from his filmography. Labyrinth as Jareth the Goblin King. That's what
yes.
you know.
I do know that.
He was in Zoolander?
Yeah.
Great cameo in Zoolander.
Ziggy Stardust.
Don't know this.
What would you say, Dave? What would you say would be like your top three Bowie songs?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't even know.
You don't know any more than three. Just claim it, dude. Own it. Like, I'm owning that I don't know who he is.
I didn't say that at all. That's not the case.
Anyone with
he
a computer
a
or a smartphone can figure out, oh, he sings that. Oh, he sings that. That's what both of you guys are doing in your heads right
no,
now
I'm
in
looking
front
through,
of a laptop.
I'm looking through what people say at the top 10 songs of Dave Bowie.
Right.
I'm not throwing any more out there. It's like Hansel said in Zoolander. Even though he said this about Sting, I'm going to say it about David Bowie. The music that he's making, I don't listen to it, but the fact that he's making it, I respect him.
That's right. I agree.
How about the WWE Sting going into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. Well deserved, the Stinger.
You think you got in because they almost killed him last year?
The kid said that you are a great DJ. And what is I think what David Bowie to me and hear me out is like the female Madonna in the way that his style, as the kid pointed out, his style changed and evolved over time, and he was always like relevant and cutting edge.
Sure.
And so there you go. All right, Dave Bowie, come back. Yeah, I like it. Good job, Gibbs. Dynamite.
See, there we go.
Let's go to Corey in New York now. Corey.
Hey, what's up, guys? I was wondering, since they made the change to analytics, if you guys think that they're going to make most of their roster changes in the draft or towards free agency, because analytics in baseball was getting veterans towards the end of their career and then getting some gains towards the end of the careers.
This isn't baseball, and it's not the same thing at all. What it is about, taking all the information they can get about what it is and how to be successful as an organization in terms of your decision-making processes, your evaluation processes, and doing that to find out what information actually does drive results and what information doesn't. What is the noise? Finding out the signal, finding out the noise, and producing consistently better outcomes. So in the NFL, I would imagine it's going to be the exact opposite. You do not want guys in their 30s in the National Football League. You're not going to sign them as free agents.
Right.
I think that was one of the big things that would have absolutely kind of seal the deal for Ray Farmer.
Yeah.
Was the decisions that he made relative to free agency this offseason.
Can I make one suggestion? Can we have like the Great Clips bell every time someone uses the word analytics, whether it's you, me, a caller? Because I have a feeling over the next 7 months, we're going to have the word analytics used more on this show than either of us ever thought we would hear in our life.
Yes. Somebody just brought it to me. I want that. By the way, I know my favorite David Bowie song now.
Okay.
Let's Dance.
Okay.
In Zoolander.
Okay.
That's a good one. That one you had heard. I guarantee you've heard that song.
I'm
have
sure.
you seen Zoolander?
I have.
Did you see the trailer for Zoolander 2?
I have.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
I have not seen the trailer.
Oh, looks so good. Looks so good. I got to thank Disco Puma for giving me Let's Dance. Put on your red shoes and dance. Yeah, Bowie's awesome. Fly of the Conchords. Did either one of you ever watch Fly of the Conchords?
The TV show?
Yeah.
No.
I don't think so.
Oh, great TV show. It was on HBO for a couple of years, and they were like a couple guys from New Zealand who had this folk band, Brit and Jermaine, and one of their songs was a tribute to Bowie in space, which was very well done. I'd urge people to check that out if they can. 216-578-0850. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get into the NFC wild card games. A heartbreaking finish for Theodore and the Vikings. And then Green Bay went out and got it done in Washington, just as I predicted. By the way, Gibbs, I'm 3-up with 7 games to go now in the dinner bet. Wilhelm has been officially eliminated from the competition.
Wow.
I don't think if you're down 10 with 7 games to go, Wilhelm, I don't believe that it's possible.
You never know.
Only if that Super Bowl is worth 5.
You're going to keep pushing that. He's going to keep pushing it.
Join me like in fantasy
chip in
football.
Chip in a chair.
Join me, my friend.
So you're telling me
there's a chance. Yes. All right. By the way, coming out of Detroit, new Lions GM Bob Quinn was neutral on Jim Caldwell's future, said he will meet with him in the next couple of days. Did not guarantee him staying at all, but he did say Matt Stafford will be their quarterback. So
should be.
As he should be. Let Matt Stafford guys get out. That is there. All right, let's go. 216-578-0850 NFC wild card round breakdown when we return.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Skirmat, Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And Dog Pound, are you volunteering? The Browns doing that's what First and 10 is all about. Make your pledge to give 10 today by committing 10 hours of community service to ClevelandBrowns.com. Wear your orange wristband to make a statement that you give back. The Cleveland Browns team is part of the First and 10 movement, and you can be too. Give 10. All right, let's go here, and we're going to take a look at these NFC wildcard games. Freezing temperatures obviously affected that game. Those guys looked miserable out there, but how about Bud Grant coming out there with sleeveless with short sleeves, and these guys like 80 years old, what a stud. 88 years
old,
I believe.
And I've been a part the two strength coaches in San Diego, Dave Redding, who was linked to Marty Schottenheimer for a long time. You know, Deke even knows Redding from his times with Marty because he was here in Cleveland as well. I was one of our strength coaches. Then when he got fired, when Marty left, we brought in and his name escapes me. But anyway, he was assistant under Dave Redding in Kansas City, came over and took his job. Both of these guys, because they're cut from the same cloth. They came up the same upbringing, having played in Kansas City. When we as a Chargers organization would go play somewhere cold, they were like the one guys, you know, because they're like holding the court on the sideline. They're the get back coaches on the side. No sleeves. I mean, you want to talk about goosebumps. I mean, these guys are like frozen by the time the game's over. But it's their ego. It's I'm the strength coach. I'm the tough guy. I'm the get back coach. You just shake your head at them.
Beasts.
Whatever.
Well, it was cold right there. And I'll tell you what, Minnesota was the better team, I thought, for the majority of that game. They deserved to win that game, but they didn't. Teddy Bridgewater on the day, more yards per attempt, better quarterback rating, better rating than Russell Wilson. Seattle dialed up some huge blitzes late, but when they got the ball back, Minnesota got the ball back. They got a big pass interference penalty. Teddy made a perfect throw, got him down to Kyle Rudolph on a dangerous out. They tried to jump that and pick it. They got down into field goal range. The laces weren't out, and for the second time in his entire NFL career, Blair Walsh missed a field goal from under 30 yards. The only other one he'd ever missed was blocked. He had never had a ball off of his foot missed from that
but
distance.
But did you see that the broadcasters made point that the field goal that he made prior,
the 47-yard,
the 47
laces,
had
were also,
laces were also in, and he striped it
right down the middle
like a bullet.
How does that punter, how does that happen, though? You've got to get that right.
You have to get it right. And to me, what's surprising is the holder, or the punter, whatever you want to call him, made no attempt to spin it either time, because usually it's a, you know, it's a, you, it's the catch and spin. It's almost like a simultaneous catch and spin motion by all play, you know, all holders, because they wanted to make an attempt.
Well, if you think about the way you catch it, you know if the laces are on your backhand, and that's when you would spin it.
And be honest with you, and I'm not going to say the A word analytically, there are studies done, and like special team coaches take advantage of slowing down tape to see how many revolutions are on the ball from snapper to holder, so that you can say what yardage, it's the yardage that the holder is back is not necessarily always just for the kicker. It's also too for the holder and snapper, so that ball arrives and
without needing
and 75% of the time can be put down, not having to be spun, which means the kicker is going to kick the back portion of the football a high percentage of the time, which is what you want. And the laces might not always be perfectly straight, but he's going to kick the backside of the ball and not hit the laces.
And in this case, he did hit the laces and he missed. I thought Minnesota deserved to win that game, but you know what? Adrian Peterson, it's plagued him his whole career. Fumbled, lost it. That was a massive play. They got down there. You wanted a game-winning drive from your quarterback. You got it from Theodore, and yet the kick missed and they lost. That one maybe more heartbreaking than the way that the Bengals lost. The way the Bengals lost, they imploded. The Vikings did it all right. They drove it down there and
What's so it was just taking me back to some, you know, disappointing losses in my career. The New York Jets game in 2004, after we were 12-4, you know, the Jets are the wild card coming to San Diego, we're the division winner, and they kick that ball, or Nate Kading, you know, misses a kick to win the football game, and then the Jets get the ball back, go down the field, and kick their field goal in overtime to win and eliminate us from the playoffs. But just seeing the Viking sideline and seeing Adrian Peterson with the cape on the sideline and just, you know, falling to his knees because he knows as a Viking and as a professional,
his
fumble, yes, but his opportunity to win a championship as a professional is dwindling away, and him being the leading rusher in the league, you know, is slowly over time going to dwindle, and he knows his window's closing, just like Aaron Rodgers and the great play, which we'll get to here, that he had yesterday. His window's closing, to see him play his best football was good yesterday.
Yeah, and then we'll go to Green Bay, Washington. Washington up at one point in this game, 11-0. You think that, okay, maybe this thing is over. The Packers on their first four possessions, Matt, the first four possessions, they had 14 yards of offense. It looked like nothing was going to work, and then all of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers got going, Eddie Lacy got going, Radame Starks got going, James Jones, Randall Cobb, Davante Adams. This offense just kicked into gear. They shut down the Redskins, and they ran off 17 unanswered at one point, ended up winning the game 35-18. And the Packers will go take on the Arizona Cardinals, who absolutely brutalized them earlier
right
this year.
Now, the Packers team that we saw yesterday, beyond the first quarter, is, I'm sure, a twinkle to Mike McCarthy's eye. Because
sure,
Mike McCarthy doesn't want Aaron Rodgers to have to drop back 40 times and throw the football. He wants that balance. Although you've heard Aaron Rodgers hit, you know, airwaves or TV stations and say, let's let it rip, let's let it fly, you know, entrusting himself and his guys to figure it out and get it done.
And he was off early in that.
And he was off early in that. So I said beyond the first quarter, but ultimately they're showing yesterday and the balance that they have on the ground game only helps them against the Arizona Cardinals, because now the Cardinals will have to create a game plan to structurally slow down James Starks and Eddie Lacy, but also contain one of the most elusive, you know, rocket arms in all of football in Aaron Rodgers.
And they use Randall Cobb as a runner in that one, 5 carries for him. They ran for 141 on the day, and they looked like a team that had a chance. I thought they were going to win this game. They did. Now they've got a chance to go against Arizona, whereas beforehand I wouldn't have thought they would have had a chance. So the matchups in the next round, Seattle at Carolina, that is going to be a great physical game. I can't wait to watch that one.
I mean, the worst of the games left to play is probably going to – the worst team left, probably because of injury, is going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers. Even though with a healthy Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown is a team that could potentially make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, you got Kansas City, the hottest team in the NFL against the Patriots. You've got Big Ben versus Peyton Manning. You've got the Panthers and the Seahawks, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton. And then you've got Aaron Rodgers and arguably the best offense in the NFL, the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, this is a great weekend of football. This is a great, great weekend of football. I can't wait to see it. Gibbs, which one of those games are you looking forward to the most? And what surprised you, if anything, from Wild Card Weekend?
You know what? I really am looking forward. I do like Green Bay. I have a number of friends that are Packer fans, so I've got a little bit of an interest in that game.
You think they can beat? Do you think they can beat Arizona?
Boy, if the team that showed up yesterday in Washington shows up in Arizona, you're gonna have a hell of a football game.
Great defensive effort by them too. And
that's what it's gonna come down to, because I don't think their offense can put out that kind of production. I think that, you know, the right teams won. And I told my buddies who are Packer fans, I said, I go, the best thing that could have happened to you guys was losing to Minnesota in week 17. You didn't have to play Seattle. You got Washington. You don't have to go to Carolina. Now, I'm not saying that Arizona is some kind of slouch, but, you know, you're playing in conditions that are favorable for your offense.
Yeah.
I think the table is set. I think – Seattle, it wouldn't be surprising to me at all if Seattle runs the table here and gets to back to the Super Bowl.
Minnesota had them beat. I think Carolina's matches up pretty well with them.
That's going to be a fantastic game. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the one thing that moving into the next round, Arizona hosting, Carolina hosting, maybe Denver hosting, is weather going to be that big of a factor in the divisional round like it was in the wild card?
No, they were saying Carolina, early forecast for next week.
55, right?
Yeah, 48, 50 degrees.
Right.
So, I mean,
and Arizona's going to be inside and hot. Denver, who knows what that's going to be. And what's the last one?
New England.
New England could be
snow, could be sleet, could be free.
Freezing. I am not as excited about the AFC matchups as I am the NFC.
Well, I'll claim it right now. I said this probably, you know, week 15 of the Super Bowl champ. I believe the Super Bowl champion will come from the NFC.
I think you're probably right now. I think the best teams are in the NFC. There's a lot that could change, and we'll see what New England has at its disposal. You know, Edelman's supposed to be back. That's huge for them.
Well, think about it. Who are the top four teams, in your opinion, left in the playoffs?
There's Carolina, Arizona. Left.
I would say New England, Arizona, Carolina, and Seattle.
Exactly.
There you go.
I mean, that's...
And Green Bay might be fifth.
I don't trust them at all.
Okay.
I don't trust them at all.
They won a playoff game in a big way on the
road. The Steelers
are
a sneaky team, and Denver's defense is good.
You know, yeah. I heard earlier on the Really Big Show today talking about it. No love for Kansas City. All they've done is won 11 in a row.
Yeah.
They were one game. They were a Denver slip up away from winning the AFC West.
Right, but they almost lost to the Browns. So that might be where the national.
What do you chalk that up to?
I don't know. Sleepwalking.
I think they were. That's what I said. I think they were sleepwalking a little bit. I think they were. I think they knew what they had to do to win, and then they got themselves. When you do that, sometimes you get yourself into a position where you might. we might let this one get away from us, and then they came up with the stop. So that was
I was hoping that they would continue with the format they had this past weekend, though, and two AFC games on Saturday, two NFC on Sunday. I like that for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it's just a random thought. But
what, having both divisions on the same, or both the conference each on the same day?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it, too.
I thought that was pretty sweet.
I thought it was cool. I don't like that they're mixing it up again. I like to. It's almost like it makes it give more of a tournament feel.
Yeah, exactly. I think the better teams won this weekend. I mean, can you honestly?
I think Minnesota. I don't think is the better team all in all, but on that day they were the better team.
Correct.
Yeah.
I thought they deserved to win. I thought that Cincinnati was the better team, actually.
See, but, I disagree with that.
But for quarterback. But if you would have told me that, for example, if Cincinnati wins that game and Andy Dalton's back this week, I like Cincinnati's long-term chances better than Pittsburgh's right now.
I agree with that.
I mean, the best thing that could have happened for the Bengals is they win under McCarron and Dalton comes in and loses next week. Because then it's just a train wreck down there. Then what do you do?
It's the best thing that could happen. Unbelievable. All right, we're going to take our final break when we come back. Last chance to get some comments in here on the coaching search, whatever you want to talk about. Also talk final thoughts, predictions for tonight's national championship game. You know I'm already on Clemson. Gibbs, what are you thinking about that? We'll find that out and more when we return and wrap it up here on this Monday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, wrapping it up here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Browns fan 52 says, Life on Mars is my favorite Bowie song. I guess you had a few people talk about David Bowie here.
Never heard of it.
Modern Love says, Derek Decoder says, that's the best one of all time. Steve Mallon, our guy Disco Puma, Space Oddity, Ashes to Ashes, and Let's Dance are the top ones there. So there's some more Bowie, some love for Bowie, Life on Mars. Here we go. Mike Silver saying the latest, I know what's going on with Hugh Jackson. Just tweeted this 5 seconds ago. It is not that. 49ers have not decided. Browns have not decided. Hugh Jackson has not been offered by anyone. He has not gotten a head coaching job yet. Now, and this was in response. Somebody said, if San Francisco doesn't get Hugh, there's going to be a lot of really upset 49ers fans. And Michael Silver said, simply, keep the faith. Said, this seems like a dance between agent and 49ers on terms the deal is done in principle. Michael Silver said, that is absolutely not the case. I am not saying that. Wow. So here we go. So that's what he's saying. Right now, the 49ers have not made an offer, and the Browns have not made an offer. That is what is being reported by Michael Silver on the Hugh Jackson front. Did that surprise you?
A little bit.
Me too.
Especially since both teams or reports from both cities say great interview.
Yeah, and maybe
very well.
Maybe they're not as hot after him as people thought. Maybe people want to. Maybe teams want to do their full due diligence. That it wasn't, you know, one of those things where we're not going to rush into it. We'll see.
I had a caller earlier. Guy couldn't wait on hold, but he had a great question. It was more of a point, and I totally agree with him. Unless you're promoting from within as a head coach, everybody shouldn't be allowed to hire a coach until after the season's over. What do you think?
Until after the Super Bowl?
Yep.
I think it's tough because you look at what Jeffrey Lurie said about the Philadelphia Eagles finding their coach and wanting to get that head start by, you know, relieving Chip Kelly of his duties to allow him to set up the brass in the way he wanted to. Jimmy Haslam waiting till, you know, soon thereafter. I mean, the evening of after their week 17 loss and promoting and firing, that's an opportunity for an owner to get a head start.
Yeah, I think it's exactly. I think it's fine. I think that you can get in there and do it. I think because when you look at it, these are the teams that need coaches. You know what I mean? That's when you need teach.
Use it as an advantage.
Use it as an advantage. Get your program in place. Get started. By the way, Michael Silver just said, somebody said, anybody who thinks the Browns are being played, Michael Silver says not true. And he goes, the Browns are not being played. So people are worried about that. Mike Silver. And he's enjoying the fact that he is Hugh Jackson's right-hand man. So the definitive news person in terms of a national perspective on what's going on with Hugh Jackson, it is Mike Silver. They're great friends. outside of football. And so that's what he said. The teams are still deciding. That's why no offer has been made on Hugh Jackson. So follow Mike Silver if you want the latest on the Hugh Jackson search. Again, I don't know which way the Browns are leaning. I've heard very positive things about Hugh Jackson. I heard positive things about the Matt Patricia interview, and I've also heard a lot of positive things about Terrell Austin. That's a name that has been coming up quite a bit. And you'd wonder if that's one of the reasons that Detroit didn't say what they're doing definitively with Jim Caldwell yet, is to keep that, you know, bullet in the holster.
But nothing good, bad, or indifferent came out of the Sean McDermott interview,
haven't,
right?
I haven't heard anything about that. I haven't heard anything about Marrone.
Right.
I keep hearing that Marrone is a strong candidate for the Giants job.
Okay. What do you think? Because I know McAdoo, their offensive coordinator there, interviewed for the job as well.
Yeah, and you'd have to think that Eli would want McAdoo.
Right.
Eli's played very, very good
football.
He has.
But he probably would. McAdoo most likely would maintain his standing as the offensive coordinator and probably, you know, add the assistant head coach to his you know, resume as well there in New York. Just simply because he's been there, and Eli, a guy who's going to be there for a while after the contract he received, will stay there for a while.
Yes, indeed. How much time, Gibbs, would you say?
Got about a minute 15 left.
How long is Pac-Man Jones's epic rant?
Hold on, I can play it for you right now.
All right, we'll go out with Pac-Man Jones, unhappy after what happened in Cincinnati last night.
Left did a horrible job. You got Jerry Port in the middle of the field talking shit. Everybody, then when somebody say something to him, he don't even supposed to be on the f***ing field.
And then, like, later on, this is Pac-Man later on after he simmered down.
All right, I'm good now. I've had my 10 minutes. But I still don't believe I should have got a flag for talking to a coach that's on the field behind the huddle. That's my opinion.
There it is, Pac-Man Jones. Heartbreak in Cincinnati.
Good.
Gibbs loves it.
And the Steelers will join him this week.
All right, that'll do it for us. Keep it tuned to ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, for the very latest on your Cleveland Browns. And, of course, stay tuned for the Golden Boys here on ESPN 854. Jason Gibbs and Matt Wilhelm. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily.
Driven by Liberty Ford.
The preceding program was a production of the Cleveland Browns and a part of the Browns Media Network.